Hello, everyone. Welcome to the next Hewlett-Packard's Lab podcast from Research to Reality. This time around, I have a great honor and pleasure hosting two gentlemen from Research, Engineering, and Operations. Pete Haddad. Hi, Pete.
Good.
And Ken Burden. Both of these gentlemen beat me for a number of years. We're not going to say how many, but I'd just like to start with a little story. When I joined Hewlett-Packard Labs, it was HP Labs at that time, I started working remotely from Boston. And every time I should log in using modem at that time, I would get the message with signed with Pete Haddad. And so I was looking forward who that Pete Haddad is. And, you know, sure enough, 25 years later, I'm still working with Pete. He's still responsible together with Ken, who is actually the network architect here. And these two gentlemen are making everything happen. So that's my angle on things. I'm sure you two have entirely different angles. So Pete and then Ken, would you like to tell us what's your history, how you joined, et cetera?
Yeah, I came to Labs in 1987. This was my second job out of college. I worked for Honeywell Information Systems as a hardware engineer for a few years, and then got sick of the East Coast and decided I would come back home. And so I started Labs as a sort of a networking engineer. There wasn't really much to networking in those days. It was things like X.25 and Infotron data switches. And as things got really exciting, ThinLAN and StarLAN. And then, you know, just over the years, everything has just continued to evolve, obviously. But yeah, so I've been with Labs in various roles since 87, all within sort of the IT support organization. So now I'm managing sort of site operations as well as the IT team. So we have a clean room here, as you all know. So we manage that clean room team and the scientific labs as well.
Thanks, Pete. And Ken, what about you? I know everybody on my team, when there's any network issues, they come to you. They don't come when everything is good and praise you. I do.
Well, that's what we're here for. I started out in an R&D lab in Spokane, Washington, which is now part of who knows what. It was Agilent, a spinoff. And so I worked as an R&D productivity engineer, transferred to Vancouver, Washington, was IT organization. We supported the entire site, all operations there, part of the HN operations. I was there for about 15 years or so. And then I joined Labs just a little over 15 years ago over in Palo Alto. And so through all that time, I've been originally a system admin, and then we kind of grew up with HP, HPE, with networking, and transitioned to working a bit doing networking here and then also in HBIT for about the last 25 plus years.
Great. I just want to iterate this one more time because I'm not sure how many people understand. If something doesn't work, you are there for us. Without you, you know, everything else won't work, all results, everything. So I always consider you key to the success of the labs. But since you've been here for quite some time, you've seen the culture change. Can you tell us your perspective on that? I remember when I joined, there was HP Way. Is it still that way? How did it change?
You want to start?
Well, I started in part of the company that was a spinoff from the original HP in Palo Alto, and I had managers that I know in Billy Days since the 1950s. In fact, my section manager had hired John Young in the company, where he was the first CEO after Hewlett-Packard. And it was a very different company even then. So I think the HP way hasn't changed. It's like our culture and our society has changed. Still values people and things that are important to us. But like the whole industry, it's much higher energy. When I first started, we were taking 10 years to develop a new product because there was no competition. Today, global competition, it's a very different world.
Well, that's a very interesting observation. How about you, Pete? What's your take on the culture evolution?
Yeah, that's a tough one for me. So I've been in labs my whole career. So know, that's sort of the microcosm that I've had to view everything through. And labs, of course, has changed a ton over the years since 87. As I said, when I first started, I think we were like 1,200 employees in a lot of different countries. And, you know, it's interesting. I think, you know, being smaller has some benefits, you know, in terms of now we can actually know everybody in labs and interact with them, as opposed to in the early days, it's impossible to know all of your customers and fellow employees when it's that big. But I believe, you know, as Ken said pretty well, you know, the world has changed and labs is, and HP has changed along with it. A lot of things that we took for granted way back when are no longer socially acceptable. You know, a lot of, but that's just kind of society in general. Yeah.
So I keep on iterating that you're playing a strategic role in labs, but what does it mean for you?
So I see myself, as well as my greater team, our primary goal is really, you know, enablers of research and productivity. That's what we're here for, is, and we'll do whatever we need to do to help the research community. And, you know, that's covers a lot of ground, you know, in terms of, you know, helping with infrastructure, actually participating in research projects, you know, moving furniture, if that's what it takes, right?
So, like these tables.
Yeah, like these tables, exactly. So, you know, that's I think, you know, why we're here, and that's what we focus.
Ken?
Yeah, I mean, I've told many managers over the years, if you need me to sweep floors, I sweep floors. I do what needs to be done. And more often than that, that's technical in nature. And we exist to meet the needs of our customers, which in this case are the researchers here within HP Labs and partner organizations within Hewlett Packard Enterprise.
And it probably is reflected all the way from the top, from executives who can step in and do recording for us. It's really exemplary. So you touched on your roles and responsibilities, but could you elaborate a little bit more, other than, you know, sweeping the floors, which we would do if needed, but what do you do on a daily basis?
Wow, daily basis.
Weekly, monthly, annual.
Even that, there's so much variety. It's one of the things I really enjoy about my work, my career here at HP Labs, or Hewlett Packard Labs, actually, is that there is a great deal of variety. Because we have so many different groups within HP Labs that are focused in different areas of research, that you're never totally sure, but it can vary from, I need help, the internet is broken, but what does that mean? To go figure it out with the researcher, or it's a land tap, or we're working on some infrastructure project where we're upgrading equipment from old equipment to new equipment, or just new equipment coming in, being a liaison between folks here and folks elsewhere within the larger HP organization to facilitate collaboration, et cetera.
Okay, Pete, anything else to add? You already covered it.
I mean, I think it's interesting that, you know, a lot of times we're so used to doing our jobs that you don't really have the broader perspective of how broad your set of responsibilities really are. You know, so I go from, Ken said, helping somebody with their PC networking problem to, you know, figuring out the next strategic purchases for infrastructure, helping with, you know, other government projects. And just, you know, I talked to, you know, Mike Fowler, our finance guy, and I tell him, you know, all these things I'm involved in, and just, he's the one that made me kind of think of it. He was sort of amazed at the level at which, you know, we not cover.
And you are here in labs working with researchers. You worked both before with developers, with other type of people, with professionals, maybe executives, marketing. So how is it different to work with researchers compared to others? Who wants to take it on first?
Go ahead.
Well, I've been outside of labs, so I've been both in a product division where they did everything from R&D, marketing, manufacturing, all of that. And I've also been in the centralized HP global IT organization. So I've always enjoyed R&D. HP Labs you're dealing with, how do I say this? You're dealing with a lot of very well-educated, skilled, experienced individuals that can be anywhere around the world. Where more often when I worked in body divisions, there weren't as many PhDs. There were very few PhDs, for example. And they were focused on more immediate term, you know, research, R&D type efforts. So it differs in that regard. So we're often involved here in helping figure out what they need at the moment they need it. In other words, it's not a turnkey solution today often for what they need. Mm-hmm. They're not totally sure what they need. We're going to be a partner with them and help them figure it out. Where I was more back in the product divisions, you're using turnkey or you're using off-the-shelf, you know, solutions for meeting their needs because they're not... The networking, for example, was a utilitarian function. Here, the networking often is part of the research project. That's a fundamental difference.
Pete, you have similar opinion or different?
Yeah, maybe a little bit different. I think that, 10 years ago, I would have thought there was a big difference. But I think as labs has moved more into doing sort of advanced development stuff, that distinction's getting a little blurrier. You know, it seems like a lot of these projects that we're working on have very, you know, tough milestones and deliverables. And, you know, it's like, putting together a commercial product almost without, you know, a lot of the...
Yeah. And Ken touched on it in the beginning when he said that there wasn't much of a network, for example. But how has infrastructure evolved from not much network to today, everything is networked?
Yeah, so that's pretty crazy.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, we look at our world in general. We take the internet for granted. I realize with both Pete and I, the ARPANET was maybe it existed when maybe didn't even exist originally when I started. No. And it was a research project. And I remember when we joined HP, everything was RS-232, like Pete mentioned. And then we had a little bit of, it took years to get, you know, even basic networking at like 1 megabit to communicate. Mm-hmm. Look at the size of data files that we have today. And back then, of course, it was much smaller because computers could handle it. And to see it grow and evolve, the technology from the major networking players to then deploying it in our network to improve the productivity and allow us to do things you couldn't even think of before that we just take for granted to me. So I look back from RS-232 modems of 300 baud to, 400 gigabit Ethernet that we
now.
I start 25, RS-32 and C600.
Right.
I mean, we had people with, for those of us, I'm dating myself here again. If you remember what an RS-232 based terminal is, 80 columns by, 24 lines. And we would have R&D engineers that had three of them on their desk. That was the poor man's alternative because there were no Windows. Now that we take Windows on, the function of Windows on Windows or X Windows or whatever, didn't exist. And so interesting to observe, I'm using three little physical terminals there. So we've evolved so much past that. It's just, incredible to think that, young people today don't understand what we had to deal with 30, 40 years ago.
And then block terminals for the banks to speed up things.
Yep.
And when I started, the HP intranet did exist. There were three nodes on the entire intranet. They were Cisco routers that had no logos. They were basically just empty chassis with a bunch of, very experimental boards in them. Our connection to the internet was a 56 kilobit satellite link. And just started going crazy after that. But that was the starting point. And at labs, we were sort of on the cutting edge most of the time. So we had a 40 megabit microwave link to Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
Where we could connect to ISP. So for a long time, labs provided internet access for the whole company, right? And so that was a very good thing because it got us kind of in bed with the corporate network engineering team and the network support team and gave us a lot of autonomy.
And I was just going to bring up that question. So on one side, you're working with labs researchers, on the other with corporate IT. So different culture, different, you want
to
say something?
I understand. If you go back to the time that Pete's talking about, IT didn't have a clue what this was.
Yeah.
Because this started within the R&D HP labs and then spread out from there to the R&D community. I remember I brought the extension of the HP intranet into Spokane, Washington, way back, and again, a 56 kilobit circuit. And I had to explain to my functional manager, my manager three levels up above me, why was he going to pay for this circuit and this equipment? And what was it going to do for him? Of course, we look back now and go, it's obvious, but no, there was no perspective there.
Yeah.
And it was only, I forget how many years later, five more years or something like that before IT really got involved. And because they were using X.25 for the communications. That's what our IT organization in Spokane used.
Yep. How do you measure success? What is success? I kind of know the answer, but I want to hear from you. What is your success?
Well, I feel like we're sort of the, you know, we live vicariously through the researchers and their successes, right? So for, you know, for me and my team, I think seeing researchers be successful, having the tools they need, you know, within our control. Obviously, there's lots of things we can't influence, but whatever way, you know, roadblocks we can remove, help them be more efficient and successful. That's really it at the end of the day. And, you know, in my other hat for the clean room and scientific labs, a big aspect of that is making sure that we have a safe environment and we, no one gets hurt. And that's equally important, honestly.
You have anything to add, Cam?
I would agree very much with what Pete said initially. It's this, we're here to meet the needs as best we can of our customers, which are the researchers and other organizations, the HP, which we partner with, HPE that we partner with. And how I measure myself is, was I effective in doing that? So when you say, am I successful? Yes, it's their success, but did I do it well or did I do it poorly?
We spoke about past, we spoke about today. Where is operations, research operations, engineering going, in your opinion? What is the future?
Well, I mean, I think obviously we've all seen sort of a somewhat migration towards cloud infrastructure. So that's obviously a big part of that. And, you know, my team has invested, you know, time in training on, you know, how to manage that infrastructure, you know, security issues, all sorts of things, so that we can, again, sort of help researchers manage that infrastructure in a safe way. So I think that's going to be a big direction. You know, a lot of, you know, just the sort of virtualization, containerization, you know, all those are, I think, big directions. I think we're always going to have local infrastructure just because we always do weird things. So that I don't think will ever go away. So we just have to try and see where the world's going and, you know, make sure we're staying relevant.
Now, Ken, question for you, now that Pete mentioned weird things. I always ask question about open source and standards, which are kind of addressing weird things. So what is your take on it? How much do you use it? How much is it important to you?
Well, it's important, especially in areas of the system administration side, which I, that's no longer my expertise, but I interact with my partners here in Pete's team. Obviously, big. We don't have software developers to go out and develop our own and create custom, you know, turnkey solutions for ourselves. So, having standard solutions, having solutions that we can use and, you know, partner with or transfer to another group within HPE generally. Obviously, this the whole reason why does anyone do open source? You know, it's the big scalability, the usability, without having everyone reinvent the wheel. So we try to do that as much as we can. Obviously, when you're in the markets that HP's in, standards are there for a reason. If you want to compete, unless you have something that's head and shoulders above everybody else, you don't, you know, look too well if you're not offering standards. So I think it's very important.
So you have both had the very rich and successful career, at least from what I have seen. What was to you most gratifying for both of you?
It's a tough list. I say one thing.
I'll say two, three.
Well, I've had the great fortune, the good fortune, the blessing of being with one employer for my entire career after college. Yet I've had a number of different positions in different organizations over just shy of 41 years. So I've enjoyed the growing up with HP, if you will, in, or HP, HPE in many ways, of the technology, getting to know a lot of people, friends that I still know and interact with today. And yeah, something's challenging that I enjoy that they actually pay me to do. So I look at that as the, you know, that I've been able to survive or stay as long as I have in a job that I enjoy so very much is what's been most rewarding to me.
We hope your manager won't listen to this. Who sits to your left? What about you, Pete?
It's very similar to Ken. It's not that much different. I think, you know, it's the also sort of the sense of sort of community and family. I've, you know, been here for so long. And of course, people come and go, but, you know, you make connections with people over decades. You know, I think that's just more than just a job, you know, honestly.
Very nice. Very nice. And what would you do differently if you were starting today?
Wow. I would have bought Cisco stock for our computer. I think that, you know, I think I would have told my younger self to try to do a better job of seeing the bigger picture, you know, where are things going, you know, rather than being so directly focused on what you're working on today and, you know, next week, you know, try and predict the future a little bit and you know, make some investments, not necessarily financial, but, you know, otherwise.
And you, Ken?
Well, I've been fortunate that I've had a number of different, if you will, jobs within HPE. And so that was a positive thing. And so I wouldn't say I just want to have one job or one organization. Not sure I could say anything because I've been so blessed. I've had such a big career after all these many.
That's a good answer.
Because most of my peers that I started out with, because there used to be people that do what Pete and I do at almost every major HP site across not only the U.S., but across the world. And it was a small enough community that we knew each other. And nature of the world and such that Pete and I are probably pretty close to the last two of our kind that started out 35, 40 years ago that were still with the organization. We are an endangered species, if you will. So must have done something right.
Yeah. So my question, the next question for you, you already answered. The question would have been, what do you advise to next generation? And you already told them that you don't have to change the job to change the job. But is that true in general, or the companies of this kind still in existence? I mean, we are. There are a few others as well that have the companies changed. What would you advise next generation?
Well, one of the things that's changed is it's not apples and apples. You know, telework didn't exist 30, 40 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. Working from home was, well, piece of paper and pencil. And if you're in a support role, that doesn't work because all your customers are at work. Mm-hmm. You can't do that. So it depends on the type of position you're in. If you're a researcher, like a number of you folks in this room are, you have that as a greater opportunity along with all the remote networking and access like that. So it's an apples and orange comparison respect. What would I tell them to do? Well, education is always helpful. One of the interests that I have as well, I'm single, so I could move and I don't have wife or children to. In fact, I came to HP Labs because I was being told to either move to Palo Alto for IT or to Texas. And so I came here. So flexibility is one of the challenges in Dave's community. work community. So I think most young people are used to that, though. I don't think that they probably have more insights or better prepared for that than I would have been.
Okay. Pete, any advice that you may offer?
I think, you know, similar to what I said before, you know, just try to get the broader picture, get experience, you know, outside of your, maybe your direct BU. You know, I know that HPE has these sort of gigs that they've been talking about. I don't know if that's actually going anywhere, but it seems like, you know, getting some sort of cross-functional experiences and trying to build a personal network. I mean, a lot of what Ken and I can actually accomplish are because of our connections and who we know. It's a huge, huge value. You have to figure out a way to make those connections.
I usually end with a few more personal life questions. Have you read any interesting book that you can recommend?
Unfortunately, I've been on these Amazon self-published books, and they're all horrible. I'm sorry. I'm not very good at, I don't have any good recommendations.
Any good location for fishing?
I can't divulge those. Although I can tell you, I found a 18-inch steelhead in the creek right behind my house.
Nice, nice.
As far as reading, I'm currently reading a book called Metabolical. It's from a professor emeritus of pediatric endocrinology at UCSF, Dr. Robert Lustig.
Interesting.
Interesting on metabolic health and such. I find it very interesting and useful.
And what do you do in spare time, other than reading book and fishing?
We have spare time. The wife permitted to have spare time.
You were in Hawaii.
I was just in Hawaii for 10 full days besides travel, but I was working about half time too.
So I didn't make him do it.
Yeah, I traveled. So I tried to go to Mexico at least once a year, to Hawaii once a year, then the Southwest once a year. So and see family where I can along the way. So traveling. On both sides of my family, I'm the family historian, took over from my father. And so I get contacted by lots of relatives and extended family, say, hey, what's this, that, and the other? So share with them. That's how I keep myself. That I have a cat. Keep you busy.
Do you have a cat, Pete?
I have two cats, and they don't really like me. They love my son. And so, no, I'm not very popular with the cats. We have a couple of Labradors, and we actually quite active fostering Labradors, you know, from the animal shelter to help them get adopted. So we've done a number of those just this season. We stay pretty active. During the summer, we spend a lot of time up on the Delta water skiing and hanging out up there, and then snow skiing and winter sports during the winter.
Excellent. And my last question for both of you is, you've lived a little bit north from here. How is that region different than region here?
Well, how much time do you want to give me? I was born in Eastern Washington, but don't remember either for a few years. And then I grew up mostly in Seattle. So anyone from the Pacific Northwest, that in which I tell you it's beautiful and sunny there all year round, don't believe them. They'll don't want to sell you a bridge. I spent probably close to roughly 18 to 20 years in the Seattle area. Worked for HP in Spokane, which is Eastern. They went to Vancouver. The weather in the Northwest can vary between those three locations a fair amount. But it's not as nice as here in the Bay Area. You have a lot more sun and less rain and drizzle and overcast. So that's the regional side of it. Seattle, of course, has grown dramatically. It's about as crazy as the Bay Area is now for traffic and people and congestion.
And you can also have the steelhead trout behind your house in the creek.
Oh, yeah. In the Northwest, of course, there's all kinds of outdoor sports and things like that. And obviously there's you know, a lot more crowded. You want to go somewhere here, you know, let's go to Yosemite, you and 800,000 other people, where in the Northwest is not quite as bad. It certainly was when I left 15 years ago, so I'm sure it's not as great as it was. But
anything to add, Pete?
No, I think Ken covered it. I think, you know, Milpitas is a new location for us, and I think a really nice facility. Real happy with the facility. Wish it didn't always smell quite so bad outside sometimes.
That's renovation.
But otherwise, it's very nice.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for stopping by.
Thanks, Alan.
Thank you. We'll be right back.